out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 249, the high-low edition here. This is probably going to be one of the last times that the episodes are configured the way that they are right now. We're going in for some small changes, little tune-ups here and there. We'll see how everybody likes it out. That, of course, being because the episode 250 is the next episode up here. So I figure it might be time to shake some things up. We're going to be an entirely Spanish-language podcast from now on. The only problem is, between now and Sunday, I have to learn Spanish. So, it may or may not. So, your mileage may vary. It's a poor attempt at a joke as well. I just want to let you know that on today's show, we're going to be talking a little bit about any of the following topics here. We're going to be talking about solar power, robots, Twitter, ships. You have to watch out what you say and how you say things sometimes, you know what I mean? Gadgets, words, the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, rather, bananas, boiling water, and a whole bunch of other topics. Literally, we covered the highs and the lows of the different things that I've been wandering around the internet watching the last couple days. And I called the episode High-Low for that very reason. We're going to get into it just a little bit. You're probably going to be able to see, because the actual news for the webs, for the episode here, the webisode, is kind of a dichotomy of different things that you may or may not encounter when you're online. So we decided to call this as the High-Low edition, just to kind of reflect that. And hopefully you're going to enjoy what we got lined up for you today. It's going to be an adventure, as it always is. Well, first off, before we get too deep into everything, I did want to thank everybody for listening to this podcast. If this is your first time here, hi and welcome. This is, of course, the Caffeination Podcast. This and all the other episodes like it, and some just a little bit different than it, are all located lovingly nestled over at www.caffeination.com. That, of course, coincidentally enough, is caffeination.com. We are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other member shows have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content. So you can head on over there and check out what they all got going for you. And last but most certainly not least, we did want to talk to you just a little bit about what our sponsor is today. Our sponsor is GoToMeeting. We are thrilled to announce that GoToMeeting, the best way to conduct an online meeting, just got a little bit better. With the introduction of version 4 as of July 7th, GoToMeeting is now available for the Mac as well. Start online meetings on the fly or just schedule them in advance. Everyone logs on to your meeting during the conference call and they can see your desktop on their screen. It's just like they're standing right next to you. If you haven't tried GoToMeeting free, it's now's the time. For a free 30-day trial, please visit GoToMeeting.com/techpodcast or click on one of the ads over at our website. It'll send you right there. That's GoToMeeting.com/techpodcast for your 30-day free trial today. You can't beat it. I mean, seriously, I've tried it out a couple times. I've actually tried out the Mac thing. They got a whole bunch of new features, so it's really kind of cool to sit there and play around with them. And hey, it's 30 days. You don't have to pay for it, so it's well worth your time to go over and investigate. You know, so just wanted to talk to you a little bit about the sponsor and thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. And we wanted to start off today's episode with a little bit of perspective, because if you're like me and you're heavily immersed in social media, there's been a lot of whining lately online. There's a little bit of, I'm going to fly through a couple things that you may or may not know about. So just kind of, if you don't know what I'm talking about, message me on Twitter or something like that, and I'll gladly fill you in on the rest of the details. But we've had people whining about the fact that their privacy is being violated by Google, because Viacom sued them and won, and now Viacom is getting a series of logs. Apparently Google and YouTube has kept everybody's logs, all the videos that people uploaded and all the videos that people have watched over the past however many years. They're sending 4 terabyte sized drives over there full of log files. Log files are pretty much plain text files most of the time. So if you have any idea how much log data can be fit into just 1 terabyte drive, I mean, I'm pretty sure I could fit most of my last month's log files, if not all of them, onto a floppy disk, a 1.44 meg floppy disk. And that's just my site. So, I mean, I'm not like a huge, fantastic site out there, but it's, you know, so Viacom's asking them, and everybody's like, oh my God, they're gonna find out who I am. Well, maybe you shouldn't have been sharing copyrighted information, whether or not you think their business model is valid. You know, so there's a lot of whining about that, and there's a lot of whining about some other stuff that's out there. It's a rather well-known and somewhat ascetic blogger by the name of Lauren Feldman. He's like a video comedian blogger, actually had a deal inked with Verizon Wireless for a massive sum of money until they actually looked a little bit more into what he was all about, and they didn't like some of the content he had previously produced, and there was a lot of racial tensions that had gone back and forth, so they reneged on the deal. They pulled back out, and it was their right to do so, and it's been a lot of very nasty comments flying back and forth about that. There's been a lot of whining on both sides of the ball. So it's been kind of, well, not so much on either of the two parties. That's the funny thing. You know, Lauren and Verizon Wireless, obviously because it's a legal matter, have kind of kept everything mum and off the radar, you know, but everybody else has been whining, and it's kind of given voice to a rather unsavory element in society. That's all I'm pretty much going to say on that one. But it's just kind of, I saw a post on Twitter, and I can't remember who it was by today, but somebody was talking a little bit about, you know, that they had been crying and whining about a bunch of different things recently, and then they got a little perspective in their life. They kind of realized that, you know, what they were going through and the different problems they had were nothing compared to what some of the other people had. So I just kind of wanted to put a little bit of a perspective piece in here, and it's still unbelievably visually impactful, and at the same point in time, it has a little bit to do with geek culture and a little bit to do with you know, just the inner gestalt of what it means to be a geek. I mean, everybody loves to take things apart, but you don't really think about the different waste matter that comes off of you know, the Western culture as it is. Everybody's seen those giant ships that, you know, go around the ocean, you know, the cruise liners and the different oil tankers and whatnot, but nobody ever figures out how they get taken apart when they've reached the end of their service life. What exactly happens to them. So there's a post over at DeviantArt.com, which I've been a member over there for a while, but I don't have a current subscription, so I'm actually a free member right now, freeloader, as the case may be. But this is by somebody, I can't remember how long ago I've seen this, and I just kept moving it around different folders in my bookmarks, and I finally decided to just put it out there because this was so impactful, and this was so kind of raw footage that I really kind of wanted to share it with everybody. It's called Hell on Earth, Visual Installment 01. It's by a user by the name of Alexius, and it's just insane when you look at this. There's an entire society over in India, a place called Chittagong, that is 144 million people live here. There are several beaches in this area, and apparently the way the tidal situation goes, it's one of the few places in the world that has a huge, huge shift in the tides. So what happens is they can actually drive the ships and the cruise liners and everything right up onto the beach, and then at low tide, they're completely exposed to the elements. I mean, completely out of the water. And if they're going to be destroying them, it doesn't really matter. What these gentlemen do, what these mostly guys are actually doing it, is they actually pretty much with their bare hands, with no safety conditions whatsoever, rip these ships apart piece by piece and sell them for scrap. I mean, these people are literally some of the most destitute people, yet hardworking people on the planet. When you're looking at the things that they're doing and the actual devastation that they're wreaking on the different pieces, it's really kind of crazy to think that, you know, all these guys are doing for the most part is using a sledgehammer and literally beating the ships apart. And every geek, every person out there, you know, I'm pretty sure that you're kind of interested in how things go together, but not everybody necessarily takes an interest into how they get taken apart. So this is really kind of an eye-opening look. Nobody wants to think that they have it as bad as everybody else, or there's somewhat of a little bit of a distance that we put between ourselves and other people that are out there. And this just, you know, this little photo essay and the kind of text that goes along with it, this is one of the places that nobody's ever allowed to photograph. And it's just kind of unbelievable that the work that these people are doing and the conditions that they live in. So I wanted to just kind of share it with you just because of the different pieces that are out there and the different photos that are in there, because it's unbelievable. So just a little bit of perspective as you head on throughout your day. And don't want to make everything like a downer, so the rest of it's not going to be nearly that bad, I promise. First up in the TechCraft section, everybody's heard me talk about Twitter, and I am twitter.com/caffeination, or at Twitter, you know, or at caffeination on Twitter, as the case may be. But I love Twitter. I think it's a fantastic service. Everybody I know in social media is pretty much on it, and everybody kind of respects it just for the population that exists there. The one function that they keep turning on and off is called replies. Basically, you can find out who has mentioned your name. The only problem with the replies function is that if, let's just say, You don't lead off the tweet with your name, so you don't say Caffeination just for you, and then they send a link or something like that, and you just, you know, somehow work my name or another person's name into the course of the conversation throughout the 140 characters that you're given. It doesn't necessarily pick up on you. What you can do, however, is use a new service called Summize. Summize, S-U-M-M-I-Z-E, is actually a search function. They actually have API plugins to where they can plug into Twitter and they can search for any term you want. One of the easiest things you can do to track your replies is actually plug your username in. So if you click on the Summize link in the show notes, you actually get sent to where my username is, and you'll see my latest tweets and the different people who've talked back to me. The other thing you can do is you can track different trends. So if you were working for Comcast, you could track Comcast. If you wanted to track the iPhone and see how many people were talking about it, you could do that. I was tracking coffee for a little while today just because it was funny to see in the morning how many different people tweeted the same thing, having my morning coffee. So it's really an interesting idea, and the thing is, Twitter has decided that not only was this little startup a very useful service, but they were a very valuable one as well, and Twitter has recently entered into talks to actually buy Summize. And the other thing that they're going to gain when they actually get Summize under their belt, if it actually does happen, is a business model. Summize actually has a way of aggregating some of the data that Twitter throws out there, some of the geolocale data. So basically, they can target ads and they can slip ads into the side of your page and say, like, if I'm a Philadelphia area Twitter user, which I am, and I tweet a lot about coffee, which I do, they can start picking different areas within Philadelphia and placing local coffee ads there. So it's just, I think that Twitter has kind of run around for so long without a discernible way to make money that they can do no wrong in actually spending some of their recent venture capital on an actual company that uses their service, does what they do better, and has a business model attached to it. I mean, it's one of the perfect things they could do. So I just wanted to kind of put it out there and pass it along to everybody. Next little thing we have up here is civil rights groups are hitting the panic button on DTV transition. This is over at ArsTechnica.com. But basically, in case you too are in the dark, January 17th, 2009, the analog signal would basically, if you plop a TV down, plug it into the wall and turn it on, you can get a picture. Yeah, that's going away as of February 17th. They're going to be using that spectrum, or that, we've talked about this before, but they're going to be using that session of broadcast spectrum, that certain frequency, to do other things, and they're selling it out there, and it's already been sold a lot of the times, but that's not what you really need to focus on. What you need to focus on is your TV is not going to work if you don't have cable or satellite or anything else plugged into it. And apparently, the government has not done a good enough job. I know for instance that I've seen commercials probably every day about this transition, both in English and in Spanish. There's other groups that are out there that are saying that there's a couple different problems with the way that they're actually doing. They recently did a couple different surveys, and they said something around 60% of the people were not aware that there was a transition even taking place. There's currently a way you can go to get coupons from the DTV transition. There's $40 each, and they need to kind of simplify things. I'll admit to that, but they're saying that TV is an essential service, and all kinds of bad things could happen if the TV goes out. I agree with you on one hand. Yes, it's an easy way to get emergency contacts and emergency information out there. But there's another fantastic service that's been around a little bit longer. It's actually a little bit more reliable. It's called a radio. And should things go wrong, you could always turn on the radio. And they're saying, well, your TVs might not work. Yes, but you know what? Your radio still will. I haven't heard anybody say, you know what? We're going to turn off all radio AM and FM transitions. And, kind of when TV power lines and stations can't transmit, that's pretty much what people do. That's where I go for my traffic. I don't go for TV. I go for the traffic station local here because it's always running. You know what I mean? So I don't think that that's as big of a problem. The other thing they said is maybe a lot of non-English speakers might not end up knowing this. And it's like, okay, so you got to get the message out there. That's why I've been watching ads in Spanish recently. That, and I've been watching a lot of Dora the Explorer. But then they need to, the one thing that I actually really, really do agree with this is they need to make the converter boxes more accessible and affordable. If you're giving me a $40 coupon, the thing shouldn't cost more than $40, just putting it out there. We have cable here, so I don't necessarily need it, but at the same point in time, I think it would probably behoove me to get one. And apparently there's a whole bunch of different options, and there's a whole bunch of different ones that you can actually get and buy, and I'm like, there should be a base model. Like when you signed up to cable and you got that old box way back in the day that just had the numbers on the front and the numbers up on the top, so that all all the functionality that was on the remote, should it get lost, was actually on the box. That's gone the way of the dodo. You can't find that anymore. But we need that kind of simplicity for TV. It needs to be something you plug into the back, and it gets the signal. That's all. I don't think this should be anywhere near as hard as everybody's making it. So the government either needs to sponsor one specific maker and say, you know what, you are going to make the absolute plain vanilla, bare-bones DTV transition device, and just go with that. I don't think there should be a problem. So just put a bid out there, have somebody, you know, say, oh, you know what, you're going to make it, and you're only going to be able to make $40 off of it. So whatever features you can build in, have a blast. All right, moving right along to something a little bit less serious and actually a lot more awesome. Over at the Make blog, this has been making its way around here, and apparently it's actually from Philadelphia, which is even cooler. It's a pedal-powered Panzer tank. So a bunch of guys got together, and they actually used the drivetrain from a motor and a series of what looks like 6 bicycles to actually roll an armored car down some of the streets here. They built a human-powered Panzer camper wagon, 3 tank, and 11 days. It was intended to crash a party at the second annual Kensington Kinetic Sculpture Derby, which I wasn't even available. Apparently, they crashed the first annual derby with a pirate ship, but by the time they were arrived, they were too exhausted to do much party crashing. Of course, this thing weighs a ton. Maybe you should have tried to use some balsa wood, maybe a little MDF as opposed to all the metal. Although, it probably wouldn't have been an accurate representation of a tank, but you gotta love the fact that they used pink camo. It's just awesome. There's a lot of really cool, interesting stuff that's happening in tech and in social media in Philadelphia now. So it's going to be kind of fun to see where everything goes, where the winds do blow. You know what I mean? All right, up next we have a little article from over at Engadgets called Microwave Ray Guns Promises to Put Sounds in People's Heads. So the government can actually beam information into your head, or what I think is going to eventually happen is you're going to have wireless headphones, or you not even need headphones, and your iPod's going to beam it right into your head. Also might cook your medulla oblongata, but hey, you didn't need control over your bodily functions, did you? Apparently, there's a whole bunch of different patent applications that are out there, and there's somebody from over at New Scientist who said the microwave audio effect is actually being discerned down to the level where you can actually have different sounds that are recognizable. It used to be just creating tones in people's head. And apparently the person that's funding this is the U.S. Navy, and they're apparently mum on the issue. Well, given that the United States government has used audio and playing songs over and over again at high volumes as a form of torture, I can only imagine Miley Cyrus is probably going to be beaming into the back of my head any minute now after I complete this episode, or then again beforehand. If you just hear screaming for like 30 minutes, then you'll know that's what happened. All right, moving right along from over at gizmag.com. You know, we live in a culture that loves to use things and throw them away. You'd think with the advent of green technology, or with the increased presence of green technology and green energy, and this is green and that's green, people would kind of start reusing, recycling, and being able to, you know, just move on and make other uses of different things. You wouldn't think everything would be like a one-shot disposable use. Like, disposable cameras are still pretty popular, and I'm kind of stunned by that, you know? Like, you should be able to get a cartridge for the camera, you know, like an old-school camera. Imagine that. But there's one thing that's kind of always seems to lag behind everybody else. And what it is it's batteries. You know, we have almost, I'd say 120%, now we have probably around 90% of the batteries in our house are rechargeable at this point. The only thing that weren't rechargeable were the D-cell batteries that were in my son's swing when he was an infant. And that was only because I couldn't find the D-cells in time, and we didn't have a charger for them. So, but you know, when the next kid eventually, if ever, comes along, then we'll be ready, and we'll find some D-cells to take care of that. But you know, I'm pretty much of a fanatic when it comes to replacing absolutely everything in the house with rechargeable batteries. Just because I get tired of, you know, I love gadgets. I get tired of replacing the batteries every, you know, 15, 20 minutes when you're trying to use it. So it's one of the things that's irritating me about the iPhone. And yes, I'm actually mentioning the iPhone, believe it or not. I don't usually like mentioning phones or anything else like that, but this is kind of relevant. Is the fact that you can't pull the battery out and pop another one in. If this is a business phone, and if it has so many different multimedia, you know, functionalities and devices and all that other stuff kind of trapped in the one device, then, you know, you'd think that you'd be able to just pop a battery out or pop a battery in if it kind of wore down, because if you're on the road, if you're on a 6-hour flight and you got 4 hours of movie time, then you're going to be 2 hours and you're dead. So there's a new gadget coming out called the Juice Bar, and this is a simple, affordable solution. This is a a one-use battery, which basically can recharge your phone in about 60 minutes. It gives you a completely flat mobile battery, so you can pop this sucker in your bag, and it gives you 60 minutes of talk time and 480 minutes of standby. So the only thing is you have to actually tether your phone to this lovely thing called a juice bar. The problem I have with it is not that, you know, okay, that this is yet another product that can, this is yet another product that we use and throw away. It is that it looks like it would be incredibly easy to make it rechargeable. The only good thing I could see about this is actually buying one or two of them, throwing them in a glove compartment just for emergency use. And I'm pretty sure that's what the company's actually banking on. What it looks to be is, it's like, £299. So that's probably like $90 or something like that. So it's like £3, British pounds, that is, and it's probably something around like $7 or $8 when it actually comes online. So just wanted to kind of put it out there because I thought it was interesting and I thought it might, people might end up getting a use out of it. I just don't know how ecologically friendly it is. It's so easy to make something like that rechargeable. Come on, you guys can do it, you know? All right, moving right along here. It's all geek to me. There's new words on the prowl right now. Merriam-Webster Dictionary has announced the additions to the mainstream lexicon using the verbiage over at CNET, but they've included the words such as webinar, malware, netroots, pretexting, and fanboy. Fanboy is the one I'm actually kind of happy about, because now when I call somebody a fanboy, I can say, yes, it's actually a word. You can look it up in the dictionary. Last year, they only chose one really cool geek word, and that was woot, which I actually still kind of... I'm on the fence about whether woot is a wootable word to be included in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, and you know, there's a lot of hype that usually surrounds this, and people probably end up using the Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary a lot in the days after that, just to look it up to see if it's actually there. There's a lot of other services that are out there that, you know, do the same thing, and they don't all get their updates from Merriam-Webster, you know? All right, up next here we have, it's a 6-in-1 gadget, but is there really a need for it? That's the fun thing. I saw it over at Ogizmo. This is called the Halo 6-in-1 Projector alarm clock and flashlight, calendar, and compass. This is a weird-looking little shuttle of a device. It's a flashlight, and at the same point in time, it allows you to set the clock on it, and you can actually have it wake you up at a certain point in time, hence the alarm clock functionality. But the thing is that it's not like a normal alarm clock. There's no display on the actual device. It actually shines the time on the wall next to you. Same thing with the compass and the calendar and everything else. I don't see a need for it. That's the weird thing. The only thing is it's so cheap. It's only $4 plus $5 shipping and handling. This is like one of those gadgets you find in the back of a comic book. I'm pretty sure they're going to get by just on price point alone. There's a lot of other gadgets and gizmos that are out there, especially since this is from Ogizmo, that could really kind of take a little bit of a page out of this book and say, you know what? Your gadget is completely useless to most people. What you need to do is kind of price it to own. You know, hey, it's only $4. You can get this. Of course you need to be able to broadcast what time it is across the tent. So when somebody says, oh, what time it is, you just flash it at the side of the tent. They see it. And, you know, hey, it's a useful gadget. Really? Seriously? No, it isn't. The only reason I originally clicked on it was because it said Halo. And I was like, okay, there's a Halo alarm clock. What's Master Chief come over to you and say, you need to get up? But no, apparently not. All right, next thing up here, apparently the entire community out there has missed this, but Best Buy has begun to sell Ubuntu Linux. What Best Buy is doing is they are actually selling the what they call the complete edition of Ubuntu Linux, which is actually, after some minor detective work, the fine folks over at Slashdot, or the people who wrote the article over at Slashdot, actually found out that it's actually Hardy Heron, the long-term support version. So I think it's kind of cool. It's only $19.99. Kind of wanted to give you a little bit of a heads up. So if you had anybody out there who said, you know, I don't want that Linux stuff, you can't get it in the store, you can show them that, yes, it's on the store, the shelves at Best Buy. However, if you take it home, if you come home with me, I can burn you a free edition, and it's the same licensing. I don't know what else they're including there. All right, moving on into the kind of robot section here at the Caffeination Podcast. Save me, Robo Hoff. Yeah, this is not what I'm talking about. And we're not talking about the Hoff, you know, David Hasselhoff. We're talking about a robotic lifeguard. Please don't judge me. This is a fun little gizmo that's not made by iRobot, which is actually kind of interesting. But this is called a Sea Scout. It's a life rescue robot. So basically, this thing can be kind of launched off the front of a boat or dropped off the side of the boat. It's a giant. It's a raft that can actually use GPS to track people that are in the water. Has a two-way radio built into it, so once it finds the people and scoops them up, it can actually allow them to communicate with the boats and the rescue people, and it also has all kinds of other little fun features. I'm pretty sure it actually has, like, you know, spinners and, you know, rims and stuff like that, and like a keg. But I just think this is really kind of cool. They actually did the prototype with Lego Mindstorms, which is absolutely awesome. But it's kind of like an all-in-one solution to a really kind of interesting problem, because, you know, let's just say the Coast Guard's out there and they're trying to canvas an entire area. Could you imagine if they had like 50 of these things that they dropped off the back, like depth charges, and they had a little bit of communication between them? They could cover a much larger area than one giant boat could. And since they're all trackable via GPS, if you just add a little bit of autonomy to them, kind of like that fish robot that we saw a little while ago, after they canvass the area, if they find anybody, then the other ones can all either, you know, go back to that point or head back to the boat or kind of meet at a generally agreeable location, so you don't end up losing any of them and you still end up rescuing the people. So I'm pretty sure you could, you know, effectively set up a kind of cool dragnet here with very little work needed beyond here. All right, now there are other robot lawnmowers out there, but there's nothing from the Roomba people, the iRobot. I don't know why that is. I think it's kind of cool that they're working on the product. One of the working titles that they're actually using is called the MOBA, which I think is kind of, you know, uninspired, to say the least. I like the fact that the Scuba actually worked the way it does. It's the Roomba that cleans hardwood floors and tile floors instead. It's a floor washing device as opposed to a vacuuming device. So I kind of hope that iRobot gets their stuff together, because I'd love to just be able to drop one of these in the backyard, except knowing my luck, it would probably end up mowing over the tomato plants or something like that. A fine little mulching robot. I don't think you'd actually need to actually put any kind of bag system on it, because you just have it chop things in such a way. Work with the dicing guy. So that'd be kind of cool. I really kind of hope that they actually pull through with it. Not that I have enough coin laying around to actually do it, but it'd just be neat to have, you know? All right, now the next little thing here, you got to wonder why it took so long for this thing to actually happen. This is the last story we have here for TechCraft, but it's one of the ones I'm so kind of incensed about on one side, but I'm kind of joyous about on the other. Not that I'm going to be going out and buying a new car anytime soon, but apparently there's going to be an option on the new Toyota Priuses that are out there that actually have a solar panel roof. Now, before you get all excited and think you're going to be able to go completely off the grid and just drive off into the sunset, probably wouldn't be the best thing to do in a solar car. You probably want to drive into the sunrise so that you always have the sun there, or kind of follow the sun at high noon. But, you know, that might not be possible for everybody out there, and we kind of understand that night happens. You know, as George Carlin said, the forecast for tonight is dark, so it's not really conducive to solar paneldom. But what they're trying to do here is not actually replace the entire electric system of the car. What they're trying to do is have the extra 2 to 4 watts of power that would be collected by the solar panels to power the air conditioning, which is one of the systems in the car, which is one of those comfort systems, but it actually kind of saps your engine strength, and it adds a lot of extra miles, not necessarily miles per se, but adds a lot of extra wear and tear on the actual vehicle that you're driving. I know from the car that we have, you know, you can tell that the engine labors more when you have the air conditioning on and everything, and that's pretty much kind of uniform across. So if you had a system kind of in place, and this wouldn't even necessarily need to be a Prius system, you know, this could just be the first thing that you see it on, but I don't know why the car roofs haven't been kind of monetized in this fashion. I mean, just have some system out there say, you know what, you bring this in, or have an option on cars that are out there, we'll give you a solar panel roof with a nice protective shield over it, and it'll take care of this system, or it'll take care of your stereo or whatever else. Anything to get it off the car's electrical system. And then you can, of course, have the geeks that go in there and hack it apart and add stuff like PlayStations and Xboxes and all sorts of cool things, and have like a Linux server, and then the car becomes sentient, and then you have some issues. But I just kind of wonder why it took them so long. So in spring 2009, you're going to see the first versions of the Priuses rolling out with the solar panel roofed. And that's also going to be the first time you end up seeing people parking in the sun in parking lots, as opposed to trying to find shade. So the advantageous spots are going to be the ones out in the middle of nowhere. All right, that about wraps it up here on the TechCraft section. I got a little bit of caffeine and food, and then we're going to rock out on their way. How protected is your banana right now? Now, I know this might sound like a personal question, but it's not anywhere near as dirty as you may or may not think that is. We're talking about one of the most interesting and innovative pieces of Tupperware, but it's not actual Tupperware, if you know what I mean. It's just plasticware meant to keep food in, that I've kind of wondered for a while why there isn't this on the market. Because I love taking bananas to work, but I hate the fact that I have to protect them, basically wrap them in like bubble wrap, because by the time they get there, they're basically black and mushy and nasty. This is a product, so for $30, you get a 5-pack of these things, or you can get a single one for $13. It's a little bit rough. But, oh no, sorry, it's $13 for a 2-pack, $7 for one. You know, there's only two of us in the house that are currently taking bananas to work, so I'm pretty sure we could probably spring for that, but it's basically a hard shell casing for your banana. Gotta love that. I just think it's really cool. I think it's an idea that's long past its time, so I just wanted to put it out there. Alright, next little thing up here is, if you build a better mousetrap, the world will beat it back to your door. What if you build a better teapot? Yes, that's right, there's something called a nano-coated pot that boils water significantly faster. So as opposed to actually having just your standard copper tea kettle or whatever else, or whatever kind of item that you're using to boil water, this is a small coating. It's a small fibrous, tiny little nanotube coating on the bottom of the pot to actually allow more surface area of the pot to actually touch water. This is really kind of cool and really kind of interesting. So basically, when you look at it under 400 magnifying, you actually see that it looks like hair. What I want to see is two things here. I want to see that, you know, over the time of exposure to the water, do hard water molecules actually end up reducing the efficiency of the nanotubes, or are they so small that you can still, you know, pretty much assure yourself that you're fine with the way you are. You know, it's not going to clog up with sediment or anything like that. And the other thing is, what happens if you're cooking in something like this? I don't know if it's specifically just teapots, but you know, what happens if they use this technology on like a saucepan or something and you cook in it? Can you clean this, or are you going to essentially scrub the nanotubes off? I don't know how hard they are, so it's just kind of interesting. They are talking a little bit about safety concerns, because you know, there might be fractioning of the actual nanotubes, and then they end up in your food, which could probably be bad. But, you know, I'm pretty much an old school kind of guy. I like the cast iron cookware to cook my food on. So I don't know if I'm necessarily going to be buying nanotube anything in the next little while, but I thought I'd pass it along. Up next, we have two little articles from Energy Fiend. I don't know if you know this, but I'm not a real big energy drink fan, but cartoons and energy drinks are starting to go together more and more. It's like you're seeing... Since they realize that kids are one of the larger markets that they need to be playing to, that they kind of need to take into account that, you know, kids are going to be drinking these things, so we should market directly to kids. And while I understand it, I don't respect it. I think that, you know, some things like, you know, the hardcore caffeinated drinks really don't need to be marketed to like a 9-year-old. And not necessarily that 9-year-olds should be watching some of the shows that they're talking about here, or, you know, they're not necessarily geared and rated to them, but we all know kids do. Family Guy Stewie's Domination Serum, Family Guy Stewie's Mind Erase Elixir, so there's a whole bunch of different stuff there. You have the Simpsons Duff Energy Drink, which I still think is blatant false advertising. Duff in The Simpsons is beer. Duff should have been a kind of beer. Budweiser should have partnered with The Simpsons movie to sell Duff beer. I know that there's a whole big thing about alcohol and tobacco using cartoon characters, but I'm pretty sure the way that the country's going at this point in time, you're going to end up seeing legislation putting caffeinated beverages of this ilk into the same list, which is kind of depressing to think about. But there's a whole bunch of other stuff. There's a couple from The Simpsons. There's some Super Mario Brothers ones. There's a Slurm from Futurama. And the one thing that I thought was actually kind of irritating was the Mountain Dew Halo 3 Game Fuel. I know a lot of tools who were on Xbox Live who swore by this stuff. You know what? It tasted okay, but it just had a little bit more caffeine than Mountain Dew. You were fine sticking to the Mountain Dew and saving yourself some money. So just when you thought they couldn't think of anything else and they couldn't go any lower than some of the ones that they had out there, Energy Fiend had another post up there today. It's called Booty Sweat. Yeah, that's right. And there's a whole strange description of what it actually is. And the funny thing is that it's actually supposed to be reverse product placement. So the drink's being put out there to market a movie that's coming out. So it's going to be, it's by the same things that are, by the same people who are marketing the Duff beer, which it was, or the Duff energy drink, which was put out to the market The Simpsons movie. This is put out to market the movie Tropic Thunder. So I can't remember who's in it off the top of my head. It looked relatively funny, but it was one of those stupid funny movies, which I'm probably going to end up seeing, but it's probably probably going to be on the Netflix list before long. You know what? So you can head on over there and check out exactly what Booty Sweat's going to be, if that really interests you. Next little thing we had here was an article that somebody sent me from Norbert Davis from over at the Totally Cool Tech podcast actually sent me this little thing. It's called Crazy for a Coffee Ring. So basically, somebody is out there selling a tiny replica of a coffee cup, saucer, and silver spoon on a ring. I know my wife wouldn't appreciate this, so it's kind of a little bit depressing. I also couldn't tell you how much this thing actually sells for because the item is sold out. And it's sold out on the 4th of July. So this thing's really kind of cool, really awesome. I'd like to see a little bit more coffee jewelry, coffee knickknacks and stuff like that coming out. The only thing that would be even cooler is if it was an empty cup and you could pour tiny bits of coffee into it and drink it. I think that would have been awesome. And that about wraps it up here for the Caffeination Podcast. I'd like to thank everybody for listening here. I know we had a really kind of a strange episode here going, so hopefully you enjoyed it. I wanted to give you a quick little rundown on the ways that you, too, can contact me. You can either phone me in for your comments, feedback, suggestion, or hate phone calls at 215-240-1319. It's a direct-to-voicemail line. You can email me with all the same information and taunts over to caffeination@gmail.com. You can Skype me at thecaffeination. That's all one word, or you can check on over at caffeination.com for the full contact details and all the rest of the ways to get into contact or talk or whatever else you feel like doing. Or you can talk to me on any one of the variety of different social networks I may end up on. Specifically, Twitter is the flavor of the day. It has been the flavor for quite a while now. So I'd like to thank everybody for listening to this Caffeination number 249, the high-low edition. We've taken you high, we've taken you low, and we've taken you places you normally wouldn't go. So thank you very much for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.